to the Comedy Fix, where we fix comedy in all of its forms. Hey, I'm Sam Miller. I'm here today with co-hosts Jamie and Chris, as always. And Jamie, you said a nice thing when we kicked this off, is this is an episode on hosting, and you let me host it. So I really appreciate that. But how are you guys doing today?
Good, good. I want to ask you, Sam. Well, go ahead and say hi, Chris. I don't want to box you out already.
Hi.
Sam, what, when I asked you just spur of the moment to be the host, how did you feel? Did you have any, flitter of like, oh, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? Am I going to do something? Like, what was your experience just hosting just now?
Just now, looking back on it, the first thing I do is I think, what do I have to say? But I don't ever want to fully script it out, of course. But I do want to know what my highlights are. So the title of the show, my name seemed important in the moment, and then introducing you guys. I mean, that's how you introduce a podcast.
Yeah. Sam, are you doing much hosting lately?
I actually have been doing a lot of hosting, and we'll have to talk about the different kinds of hosting. But recently I've been at the Philly Improv Theater on the programming committee, and part of our responsibilities are hosting the weekend shows. So for the last 6 months or so, been hosting one or two nights a week usually. And it's an interesting challenge. And I don't appreciate how many improvisers are maybe a little intimidated by hosting, because I think, oh, you go up on stage, you don't know what you're going to say. At least hosting, you kind of have like a list of things that you're going to hit. But it's a really important job to get the audience going and get them excited. And, there have been a couple of times where I've seen a host really bring down a house, and like only maybe two times in like the last 7 years have I seen something like that. And so it's a tricky thing for sure.
Chris, how about you?
I have a lot to say about hosting, to be honest, but just kind of going off of what Sam just said, even I'm saying this slowly because I don't want to throw shade on anybody in particular, but even when we perform at the West Side, the bartender has the hosting job there, which it's pretty short, just welcoming the house, telling them who's coming up to play, and then introducing who's playing next. Even that short amount of time that they're on stage can really, I wouldn't say make or break an evening, that's too strong, but it has an effect when the person who's hosting like would rather not be there, doesn't have a little spark to them, is just kind of getting through it. It kind of, it sets a bad tone. And it's interesting, like we'll see who's bartending again. I don't know who's gonna listen to this, but we're like, oh, that person's a good host, or that person's not a great host. And I don't know, it just seems like it's important in that situation for sure.
How do you feel about people? Because I have seen the bartenders come up and introduce different groups, and some people do it spontaneously. They know what they're going to say. They know what group they're going to introduce and in what order, like they have it down, versus the person who has the little notes, like the little notes, especially for something so simple as just bringing up the next team. Like, to me, feels almost like odd.
Well, it's interesting. So I bartended at the West Side for 7 years and had to do a lot of hosting. And obviously it looks better without having a notepad. But I will say, depending on the night and who's performing and stuff, sometimes there's a lot going on. Well, I would never bring the notepad up with me, but I would have it written next to the register. So when I ring up the last wine and I'm running up on stage, I got to look. But I will say, while I'm introducing the night and telling them where the restrooms are, in my head, I am like, fuck, what's that improv team name again? You know what I mean? Like, they're all weird names, and who's going first could be a little crazy. It was always nuts when I had to bring up the host of a stand-up night, because they're going to host the stand-up night and they have like jokes and stuff in between. I didn't know shit. So that was always like, I'm like, you know him, he's so funny. And I never knew the person coming up. So I will say that the notepad thing, sometimes if you're in the weeds when with the other stuff, it's helpful. But it looks a little funky for sure. which I want to keep going. Hosting is really important to me. You know, we talked about short form last episode, and that was the first 6 years of my improv stuff. So calling a game, you know, hosting the particular game was very important. It was very important to make sure those rules came across. Just like you said, Sam, you're like, okay, what information has to be said? I got to say, for me, that's a little bit challenging. I get a little heady. I get a little nervous because I don't want people to be confused about what game is coming up next. I also don't want to just be like the person reading the rules. I want to have a little flair, a little personality. That can be tough. That can be tough. I mean, Jamie, we mentioned this last episode, but you were thrown right in the middle of that with hosting that whole show in a suit, nonetheless. And, you know, we work together a lot. I don't note you as much as we like kind of like have discussions, but the one note I would give you is, why would you use an analog watch to keep time? Oof, that seems crazy to me.
An analog watch isn't, as opposed to a digital, or? That's
correct. Yeah, like something with a
stopwatch. I always get those confused because I don't have either of them really. I just have that one.
You wore like a very nice, but like a dress watch, Sam, which is like, you know, like weird shapes and gold and stuff. It's like, what do you?
Let me ask, because first of all, it's the only watch I own. And my thinking is, I didn't want to be the asshole on stage with a cell phone out. And I don't have a digital watch. So
everyone uses their cell phone as the
time. I don't like it. I don't like it. I feel like it breaks a little bit of the thing. I want it to be like, oh, like I'm keeping track of time. Like, well, you had one game that was 2.5 minutes exactly. So I had like my watch out the whole time. Like I wanted the dramatics of like having that, and like holding up my phone just didn't feel the same.
I get that.
I did want an actual watch, but why are you asking? Was it too shiny or something
No. Actually, it was seamless. It just makes the job more difficult, in my opinion. Sometimes I kind of black out on stage because of nerves or whatnot, especially in a hosting scenario, because I'm just afraid of being me. I need it to be big, bright numbers telling me, you know, at a lot of theaters, they'll have a clock facing the stage so you can see your time. Never once in the history of all my performances have I ever been able to do the math during the show. Like, we started at 8:33, we get 24 minutes. I'm done, can't do it. So right. No, it looked great. And you did a really good job. You did a really good job, because that's a lot of heavy lifting.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's kind of what made me start thinking about hosting as like an art in itself, or as something to be studied and practiced in itself. Because yeah, I hosted that short form thing, competition, and it was surprisingly difficult. I knew it was going to be challenging. I didn't just think I was going to waltz in there. I did like practice. I had like my beats planned out. I'm like, okay, how am I going to transition from this to this? Like I really, before the thing, I was really trying to work through how to keep the flow going. But even so, even with all that preparation for like the 10 days beforehand, when I was really getting into it, once I was in there, it was much more difficult. It's so difficult to keep track of the time, because we had a tight hour because it was the Hollywood Fringe Festival. So they were going to kick us out at 9. We had to like, there was no grace period. So I had to really keep things tight. I was mindful of how much stage time everyone was getting. And so like, I felt pressure, like keep the games pumping. Cause like, I didn't want people to be sitting on their butts too long, or this person was in one scene in an hour. Like that's not cool. So then I felt weird about that. So like, I was trying to manage the tempo of the games, but then also check in with you and Mindy for the judges' scores and kind of have like a little dialogue back and forth with you, while also trying to keep the energy of the audience going at the same time and making sure that I'm connecting with them and like picking out small moments where, you know, like one lady who was sitting behind you was like looking over your shoulder at the note cards. That was a fun moment to kind of play off of and stuff like that. So it was just, it takes a lot of mental space and energy to like keep that show flow going and keep the energy of the room going, because the hosting is kind of the dip in the show. We just had a big, huge, fun game, and now here I am alone on stage again, and I have to hold that energy so it doesn't feel like a dip. It's like a little, it's a pause, but I don't want it to feel like a dip. So it was just a lot to do. And I was kind of surprised by how difficult it was. And yeah, I'm kind of just fascinated by it, because now I'm noticing hostesses. I don't know if we gender that word, but I'm noticing them, and I'm observing that, wow, you can tell when people are just making it up. Like they gave no thought to this at all. They just, they trust in their improvisational abilities so much that they think that you just go up and then it translates to hosting, and it does not. I think it shows. So I've just been fascinated by it now, and I want to get much better at it. So I was curious to talk to you guys about tips, tricks, pitfalls, your experiences, and so on.
I mean, it's fascinating that this is the first time, and I'm tempting fate here, but this is the first time Jamie has not been. Let's define hosting, which I think is interesting. Like, maybe we know it a little bit when we see it, but even as you were talking about it, you know, the job of host starts before the show starts, right? I mean, part of it is helping make sure that the performers scheduled to be there are there, that there's communication with the front of house. A lot of times might be a host responsibility, making sure that the audience is getting comfortably seated and all of that. You know, making sure the audience isn't all sitting in the back of the room, right? Trying to get to the come forward. I mean, there are a lot of different things that hosts can have as a responsibility, like you said too, which is managing stage time and managing the time in between, right? If someone has a little bit extra preparation time, you might have to, you know, for lack of a better term, vamp up on stage for a minute in order to buy some other performers a little bit of time. It is, though, a wonderful performance opportunity to interact with the audience. And that's something that I actually really enjoy about the hosting, is that it can be immediate. We can make some jokes with the audience based on what we're seeing and observing. And in that way, there's an element of clown for me in sort of the host role that we don't necessarily get, you know, just with our improv set, but it's a big job, and can, I think, be more than just getting on stage and saying, next up, it's this team.
It's such a fine line, Sam, because, like, though it can be a performance opportunity, when I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is not your show, homie. Like, this is not, actually, don't make this a performance opportunity. But also, you're right, Sam, I don't just want the info. Like, that's what it is, kind of an art form where you can have a little fun, notice that thing, a little riff, and now back to the show. Mm-hmm. But we've also seen the host where it's like, my time to shine. Like, oh, fuck, this is a bummer, you know? At Second City, when you audition for the touring company, 30% of the audition, which is a very scary audition, is, you know, very... the audition itself isn't scary, it's just a lot high stakes, is hosting. And so they put a real emphasis on that. And I've always appreciated my training from that. I don't know to what degree I don't know how often I think about Second City or my training, but the hosting for sure. They really wanted it to be that this is a professional show, not just coming out and just reading a notepad and saying, I guess next up is this group. And you had to make the games clear, obviously. But there was one thing I learned that blew my fucking brain apart. Shoot, now I don't know if I learned it at Second City or if I learned it at my college, but no, it was Second City. Part of the idea of calling these games, meaning the person who would go up and describe what's about to happen and why we would switch that off, was because they thought it was important for the audience to get a baseline idea of who you are without performing, so that then they can then see when you're playing that cowboy, how it's so different from who you are at your zero. Am I making that clear? It's such a fascinating idea that I probably heard that once and then never heard it again in all my time. I love the idea, or something to it, of coming out and saying, this is how I typically sound. This is the cadence in my voice, and this is me. And so later on, when I'm playing a zombie, you're going to be able to gauge the difference, or see that's like, whoa, that's not how he sounds or talks or moves. That's an interesting little tidbit. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on if that is even actually happening.
I love it as an idea. And, you know, even within the improv show itself, right, there's generally someone's like, who's going to get the get, right? So who on the team is going to sort of be the ambassador and like host the little sort of section? I'm thinking more long form. I know you guys are also talking about short form. But it is part of that idea is like, yeah, how can we show them who we as performers are before we even get started, right? How can we show that we're excited to be here and enthusiastic and fun people even before we started playing together, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's like the sub hosting. Like, you get the bartender to bring your group out, and then you have an internal host to set the show off if you're doing long form usually. Yeah, because Liam and I, when we do our long form show, we I guess it kind of does tie into what Chris is saying. We come out and we just stand there stoic, waiting for the music to stop. We don't clap or cheer. We just wait for everybody to shut up. So we say, hi, we're the park, and we get a suggestion of an object, whatever. And yeah, that makes me think, like, yeah, does that set the tone of like what to jump off of? Is like, we're dead serious. This is a serious show. And then when we go nuts, it's like night and day. I never thought about it that way, but it feels like maybe that is at play.
But in that case, those of us who have seen enough long form know that's a stylized move.
Right.
Or maybe we've worked together enough that because I've also coached teams. I'm like, how about we don't come out and clap? We come out like professionals, you know? And it's the same thing with like
booking. Coming out and like, clapping is not coming out as a professional.
I don't know. It's like, we're the goofball thing. We hold it. It's like, all right, dude. All right. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with that. But that is interesting though. That is interesting to like fuck around with their expectations of who you are based on how you come out. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Cause interesting also, about hosting. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, we can come back to it. I just want to throw it out there before I forget is also an important part of hosting is how you exit, you know? So the entrance is just as important as the exit. And that's been really interesting to watch how different groups exit, how the host concludes the show, what they say, things like that. We can come back to that, but Chris, what were you going to say?
Well, no, I mean, top and bottom of show, I don't know if it goes into the hosting or not, but I think are so important to me. When I'm coaching my teams, I think again, because of my second city training, we need to be clean at the end. And I like a bow. I don't like just like six people, like two are in a hoodie, one's hanging out, like one kind of bowed, one's waving to their friend, and then four just leave. You know, I like a hold hands up and down, give a little shout out to the tech booth, wave to the people and exit. I think it looks clean. It looks like it's easy to get that, to muddy that up a little bit. Really quickly, kind of broadly, when somebody sees that the Comedy Fix has a new episode and it says hosting, I think the majority of people, well, I guess if they listen to us, they know we're mainly improvisers, but like the word hosting usually isn't associated with introducing an improv show. It's, you know, like there's a whole segment of the entertainment culture where like you're a comedic actor, a dramatic actor, or a host. Mm-hmm. A lot of people try to go the host route. You know what I mean? That's interesting too, that like maybe a lot of improvisers don't see a parallel between what they're doing and like entertainment hosting. I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, just even you saying that is interesting because I host holiday parties. And to me, I approach that very much the same. I think, well, how do we get from one part of, you know, like if we're going to play games or people are like mingling it for like the different parts of the evening, like how do we transition without being like, okay, everybody shut up and now we're going to play a game because that's jarring. So like, how do you like transition and facilitate? So yeah, I guess now I'm thinking about hosting on like a macro level, every kind of hosting, like the managing of people's expectations for an evening such that they feel comfortable transitioning from one part to another part without feeling like they're jarred. I guess maybe that's what hosting is at its core.
I'm not trying to play the host game, association game, but when I think about somebody in my life who I think is a good host, I think of Zach Huddleston. Zach has a really nice professional quality. He's very clear and very bright and gets the job done. Where like I might go out there and get a little overexcited, stutter, comment on that stutter to get a joke. And now we're kind of in the fucking weeds of like, Jesus Christ, we got to watch this guy have a breakdown. But Sam, I've always said this about Zach as well, that I think that he would also make a good late night host because of that. Like there's something to the, about, I don't know why, but I think he would be good. Where I guess he doesn't need it all to be all about him, but he's aware of timing. He's aware of show pacing and stuff. There's something there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a special quality, and it's funny, you mentioned hosts, and I was thinking of like game show hosts, right? And like Survivor, and Jeff is such an amazing host on that show. And then there are like late night hosts, right? And a lot of them are come from like a stand-up background or even like a sketch writing background, which I think is kind of fascinating. But I don't know, like I guess I keep coming back to this idea that there's the host part of the show and there's the host parts like around the show, right? And like the producing aspects of that like before we even step on stage, like a team knows if they're in good hands or not, right? Or the audience kind of knows if it's going to be a good show or not just by how we're setting stuff up. And Fit, I'm rambling a bit, but like Fit has a whole sort of guide on hosting, and it sends it out to people who sign up to host. And it's like, look, we don't want you to have pre-written bits. We don't want you to have deadpan delivery. We want you to stand downstage in the lights. We want you to have a nice, clear, loud voice. We want you to hit a couple of points. And I don't know about you guys. I always feel like I miss one of my points when I'm hosting. Like I forgot to talk about classes, or I forgot to talk about the shows, or I forgot to remind people to take your trash out with you. There's always like one thing. I get like 5 out of 6, you know?
I've been thinking about that. Oh, sorry. I was thinking about that too. What, rather than like, let's take it from an audience perspective. What does the audience want from a host? Because sometimes I'm at shows and then a host comes out and it's like an information dump. It's like, you can find this at this website and we have classes Monday through Friday and shows every evening and there's a bar across the street and make sure you hashtag. It's like, I just like, it's too much and it's actually off-putting. So it's like, well, maybe the audience wants some information, but like, I guess if we could create an ideal host introduction monologue, what would be the few things that we would want from a host at the top of a show? Do you set up the expectations for the evening? Like there's an intermission, you want to say intermission, there's no intermission, where it's 1 hour, it's, you know, two teams, and then like how much do we give them, or just kind of let them?
Do you do the, is this anyone's first night seeing an improv show?
Amanda Davis does that to introduce Heyday. Like that's part of getting our get, because then we ask them for their name and we use their name in as a suggestion. So she says, who's never been here before, who comes here all the time? So that's interesting one too.
Fun. I love that.
You know, at the website, it's important that we say the restrooms are over there. You can use anyone, because for a while that was a hot topic, you know, so that legally the exit's over here. We have to say that. You know, I think that's like an actual thing you must say. And then, yeah, it gets a little muddy there, Sam, with like, visit westsidecomedy.com. We have classes, shows here 7 nights a week. And some nights the house is getting up and leaving, like during like the exit hosting, when you're like thanking them, they're, and then it's nuts. Like, and for classes and that's tough.
Yeah. That's tough. Or when the improv show sub-host dismisses the audience on their way out, but you kind of like, you still have to sort of close it out with some of the official stuff. I try to never hit more than like one or maybe two pieces of information, right? Like I will sell classes or I will sell shows. I'm not going to do both in the same chunk, because I don't know, I probably have like one other introduction piece to do or so. But piecing that information out, I mean, that's Now you're working for the facility, right? That's not really for the audience. That's for the person who's letting you host on the stage itself, right?
Which makes sense, but it's fun. And I totally understand why a business would do that. But I don't think, I can't recall a time I've ever been in the house and I'm like, oh, that's their website? Or they offer shows here 7 days a week? Like, I don't think information has ever helped me. Matter of fact, like we're lucky that the house is there. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. Yeah. But I want a little enthusiasm. I want a little enthusiasm. I want you to pretend like you're happy to be there. That would be nice. Because when they just read the names of the improv teams, that's really sad.
Yeah. Let me tell you guys this. Have you had to deal with a situation where you've had to, as host, handle something in the audience, possibly? Like, you know, there's a lot of back and forth, or someone's talking, hopefully not heckling, kind of a thing. And, you know, different levels of experience, the improv team itself might be able to handle some of that. But even as a host, you might have to tamp it down a little bit. Have y'all dealt with that?
It's never been that bad, and maybe I'm sure Chris has had worse experiences, but something I've been thinking about lately is the host rejection of suggestions from the audience, like how to navigate that, because boy, oh boy, is there a wide range of it. And some of them are so off-putting, like that was a dumb suggestion. And then nobody wants to give a suggestion because that person got just totally shat on. But then also some suggestions are terrible. Like in our short form show, this was June when Oh, the
yeah.
Titanic submersible thing was happening, and someone said submarine as the location, and then there was like this weird awkwardness, and it's like, and I said something like, on any other week I would have taken that, and then we just moved on. And so like that was my way of like acknowledging it, not saying it was a shitty suggestion, but like because they were trying to be funny or trying to be silly, so like I don't want to like create like tension between me and the audience by saying no, that's insensitive. Like, you know, that's not the time for it. So I'm really interested in what you guys have to say about navigating bad suggestions or getting the rejecting suggestions from the audience. Because that's a, I think that's a pivotal point where you can kind of turn the audience off. Like when I see that handled poorly, it's like, oh God, no
I
one's going to
don't
want to.
understand why they're not being taught that. I do. I would never, sounds like a, whatever. I would never let a team of mine do that. Do the raffle off. Like, no, not that one. Anything else? No, not that one. Somebody that I know who's a professional, has been doing this for a long time, did this at their show recently, and I was shocked. And I can't tell you that is that might be my least favorite. I think I'd rather have somebody come up with no enthusiasm and somebody doing the raffle off, or kind of say half of it, or to me, this is a stupid one to combine the two because they can't make a decision. I heard rabbit, I heard sock, rabbit sock. I'm like, what are we doing here? Take control for a fucking second, for goodness sakes. The way you handled the Titanic situation was great. People panic in there. They panic. But we need to like that needs to be part of the class, this professionalism, this how to do it. You know, in Second City, we also learn how to burn suggestions, you know, ones that we might get a lot or ones that we don't want to do. So we'll say that. And there's always like the you learn a couple of tricks when they scream out dildo, you go, we did that last week, you know, next. You don't punish them. 'Cause I used to punish them. That's not helpful. But yeah, that's such an interesting little thing there.
Yeah, I'll say a pet peeve of mine that I've seen recently is all right, this is our get we're going to get location. So on the count of three, shout it out. One, two, three. And then you have like 15 people shout it out. You can't hear anything, right?
Awful, awful. I like to go to a person. I like that. I think that's clean. Pardon me. Hi, how are you, ma'am? And you know, I think that's clean. The one, two, three, get out of here, Sam. Get out. As soon as that's happening, I'm like, this show is probably gonna be a bad show. It's probably gonna be a bad show.
But
Yeah. And
see,
you
yeah, I mean,
saw
look,
folks. Wow. Yeah.
yeah, I was gonna say it starts and stops with the host because yeah, just getting the suggestion, you're already like, that's.
Well, and like at the Groundlings, you know, the handful of times I've done the Cooking with Gas show, the show is a series of gets throughout, almost like short form, right? It's a series of gets that gets a little funky sometimes because you have the person who hasn't been heard, who can't stop screaming, whatever it is, cotton candy, the next one, cotton candy. Then like, what's this person saying? Cotton, and they're like, okay, cotton candy guy, I hear you. You know, it gets a little funky up there. That's why I think it is a, it's a, you, a practicable skill. You should work on this.
How would you recommend working on it outside of actually doing it? I'll drop this. I was a rhetoric major in college, and
Hell
part of
yeah,
it
dog.
was extemporaneous speaking. And the whole idea was, right, like you're going to go up not with a full written speech that you've memorized, but you know, 4 or 5 points that you're going to hit, and you're going to connect those dots together. That's like a practice in the mirror kind of a situation. Is that what you would recommend, or how can you do it alone?
I mean, I've never really considered it, but now that I am, I would think to go over in my head the 4 or 5 things that could go wrong. In that, like everyone's speaking at once, somebody is saying something that is not a great or an offensive thing. Like stuff like that, like be prepared for that moment. I don't even mean like that you would know what to do, but that like recognize that that might come to you. Because sometimes I see these hosts, Sam, and I'm like, how are they completely shocked that this is happening to them? Now they're like crumbling before our very eyes. When that's, if I today, right now, I could go up, even though I'm not a great host. I think I can handle the situations. So I don't know. I don't know. I just think about it. No one probably thinks about it.
We recently wrapped up our house run as a Herald team at Fit, and someone who hadn't hosted before volunteered to host like one of our last shows, which was really cool. We were trying to push ourselves to do stuff we hadn't done before. And our coach recently did a workshop at the Pig Iron Theater here. And you guys probably know this exercise, but you stand up and do nothing in front of the group. right? You just stand there, you make eye contact with everyone, you breathe, you just sort of like possess the stage in that moment doing nothing. And I thought that was actually a really helpful exercise. You can't really do it alone. You have to have people there, but so much of the hosting is just having that confidence, right? To just stand there and be present in that moment.
Me, Jamie, Liam, and my wife, we caught a show a couple nights ago, and the show had its good points and bad points, but one of the things my wife liked was the gentleman's comfortability on stage, and there is something to be said about that. When even if it's not hitting or going well, when you're not panicking, and what you're saying sounds like a really nice meditation in that. Just stand there for a second, because they're looking at you. Listen, I've spent my whole life being afraid of everything, and because of that, I try to like, I don't know if the word would be pander to the audience, but I let them know I'm cool and they smell blood and they'll fucking rip me apart. And that happened a couple of times. Now I've lost control of the fucking house because I was unsure and they can smell that I'm unsure and they can go after that. Where like that exercise sounds nice, just kind of taking up some space there, just being present, looking at them and letting them understand we're happy that you're here, but this is our show. And this is the way things are going to go. And when I come to you, get ready to come up with a suggestion. And if I don't open your fucking mouths. No. That's
That's
nice,
true.
Sam.
They even teach that, like, for a brief moment in college, I was thinking about being a high school teacher. And so I was taking, like, how to teach classes. And they talk about controlling the room and, how to basically control the room without, like, being like a dictator, So, like, if there's a troubled student, you go stand by them while you're teaching your class or whatever, because
Wow.
that presence intimidates them, so they start behaving more, or like if people can't hear you, if you're in a big auditorium, whatever, then you stand on the far side of the room so people who are talking in the audience will project naturally so everybody in the audience can hear them. So like how to like manage a room when you are kind of in control of the space, because it matters, because when you exude that confidence and that control, I think people in the audience want that. The audience does not want to be in control of the show. They're there to like give the reins over to the performers for the evening. And when the performers don't hold the reins or the host doesn't, then I think then it feels uncomfortable and unsatisfying. So yeah, I think that does sound like a great exercise for sure.
And we touched on this, but the opposite is also kind of true. The person who thinks it's their time to shine, some fucking Bob Barker motherfucker up there, like doing bits and very like used car salesman-y type thing. That dude or person, I also can't stand. I can think of situations where I've seen this. I can think of one person in particular. And it's just, I guess in their head, they think, hey, I'm performing or something. I mean, how much of it is performance, Sam? And how much of it is information giving?
As we're talking about this, I'm thinking about when I was spending more time in sort of the television writing world, and you have to pitch, right? And I think one of the things that's really challenging about it is not coming off as that salesman and just being yourself, right? And just not putting too much on it, but this is just an excited, happy version of Sam. It's not salesman mode, Sam. It's a fine line to just kind of get up there, I think, as much as yourself, but like a good version of yourself, right? Like as we've said, like you don't want to come in if you're in a bad mood or I've seen someone like try to host when they're sick, and that's a really challenging situation to be in, right? If your voice isn't 100%, that can just kind of set things on a little bit of a wobbly start.
I wonder if part of the difficulty, maybe I'll speak for myself, is because I am up there as me, which I'm not terribly comfortable with. I'm okay teaching, but not, it's a little more less comfortable for me to be up there as me. Like I can, sometimes when I tell people that I don't really love public speaking, they're shocked because like, well, you're in front of people all the time, you're doing all this, but it's, there is a difference. There is a difference. That's why someone, like I said, Zach, that's really good at ABD is really good at it. ABD, like you're saying, Sam, she's not selling anything, but she's genuinely happy to be there. And then she kind of can't lose because she's in such a great mood and she loves to play, and that's infectious. That's actually, I don't know if you could teach that. That's just who she is, and it's really wonderful. Jamie Moyer, same thing. There's nowhere else she'd rather be tonight than here. And it really reads. So no matter what she says or how she says it, it's comes from a cool place. When I'm running rehearsals for all these teams I coach, after we've run through some exercises. All right, let's do a couple pieces. I'll always switch up who gets the get, who's asking for the suggestion. It's really interesting how some people kind of crumble, like in someone's living room, as we're just doing. All right, you, it's your turn. Hi, we're this team. Like, whoa, we need to work on this a little bit. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and how much? That's interesting too, because how much are you affected by the crowd? Like, say there's five people in the audience, like the host, like, do you, I think that shakes a lot of people. And then they like it starts to show in the performance and maybe how they even get the, they don't play like they're playing to 1,000 people. They play to like, they're playing to five. And so they get smaller. But like, do you think, I mean, I guess, what do you think about that? Should people play to the house they have, or should it always be that kind of presentational, like this is going to be a great show?
No, I like adjusting. I mean, Sam mentioned this earlier. I've only been in shows where it's happened a handful of times, but I always respected the person who called for it, which is like taking that moment to recognize that this is a smaller house tonight, asking them to come forward. Sam, that's a scary ask. That's something I probably couldn't do today. It makes me very uncomfortable, but I've seen people do it. And even though the audience is like, oh, I gotta move, it actually was better for everybody. And furthermore, Jamie, during this last round of auditions, you know, and Sam, you can imagine, there's auditions for 12 hours. So not every hour is full. It was weird to see some teams who were auditioning in front of seven people pretend like they're doing a show for 70. Where on the one hand, I understand why they would do that. Hey, give the best performance possible. They're here, you know, let's do this. But there's a something that's false about it that doesn't ring true to me, that it would be much better if they looked at everybody and said, hey, everybody, it's still daylight. No one here is drinking. It's hot. The AC is not working. There's only six of you, seven of you. And then somehow play within that. But Sam, when I've brought that up recently to some of my teams who audition regularly, everybody gets on board with the idea, like, oh, that sounds fun. But nobody wants to execute that. No, that takes a certain kind of, I don't know what the word is. I don't know if it's guts or experience or both, but people are very afraid to spend a little time going, let's just call this what this is. And yeah, then we're gonna do an intimate show. We're gonna sit in the house, actually, all in the chairs, and just do a show for you. Again, right now we say that, people listening are probably like, yeah, that sounds cool. Nobody does that. Why is that?
I feel very lucky that Jamie and I got to play a lot to smaller houses, because I do think experience helped that a lot. And now something I'll sort of say is like, oh, cool, it's a small crowd. Like, we're going to experiment a little bit more tonight.
Yeah.
We're
going to
have sort of a special experience in some ways, because you're right. Like, the energy is very different. You can't have the same show. And of course you generally want like a really nice large audience, but having the vulnerability or the authenticity to just kind of, you know, speak to the elephant in the room, right? Like, we are all aware that there are only six people in the audience. They know it. I know it. I can't skate over that. I can't ignore that fact. Right. Embracing it is the best thing, I think.
That's, I mean, interesting.
Jamie, just real quick, Jamie, you even in a rehearsal and with Sam, actually, you guys are the ones who taught me this, that you were willing to use anything in the space. I'm like, what are you doing with that table? There's no tables in improv, whatever. Doesn't that also bleed over to the house? Like, isn't that also part of the show? Isn't everything available for you to comment on or use?
Yeah, and I think people should, because it's, especially in improv, it's the only real thing, because everything else is made up. We're fictionalizing a kitchen on stage. There's no kitchen. So the only real thing is the tables, the chairs, the lights, the bartender, the three people in the audience. And so I think it can create a more powerful experience when you're present in the room and acknowledging what's real, because we're all having that same experience of there's seven people, as opposed to the audience is having an experience where there's seven people and the people on stage are having the experience that there's 1,000, and there's this disjuncture. And it's like, we're not even living in the same world. So we have to like do more work to get the audience on the same page with us, because we're playing as if it's a bigger house and they're watching as if it's not. So I do think being present in the room and adjusting is good. And I agree with Sam. I think it's the elephant in the room. I think it's almost admitting like failure. I think people perceive it as that, as like, if you have a seven people in your audience, chances are you probably wanted 50. So this is some kind of failure, maybe a reflection on how popular you are, how successful your group is, or where you are in your improv career. And so people like take it personally and can't deal with it and are uncomfortable in addressing, as opposed to, great, there's seven people. This first scene is for you, ma'am, right here. Like, whatever, like that could be a really cool, fun experience. But, and I think Sam is right. There is this approach of when you have a smaller audience, you tend to experiment more. But my question is, why? Why does that feel like the time for experimentation than when there's like a big booming house? Like, why does that trigger that reaction in us as performers? Like, oh, it's experimental night versus we're going to go with the traditional stuff because there's more people here. Like, what is that?
It's a great question. I think something, when I have a larger house, there's more opportunity for something to land. And, you know, even if it just makes like 10 people laugh in that room, right? Like, you can kind of build on that a little bit in a way that when there's only like seven people, stuff's just not going to land the same way in that audience. And I had a show recently and it was a pretty small house, and it was so fun to be able to call someone out I knew and just be like, hey, if I roll, what number? Eight. Okay. If I roll an eight, he's going to pay you $20. Like, that's, and you know, it's like, he's a performer. He knows how this bit kind of goes, but there's almost an invitation to get to use the audience. I mean, I love, Chris, your example of like going to a specific person for the suggestion. I think there's a lot more opportunity to make it an individual show when there's only seven people. You can't make it individual for 50, but you can kind of make it individual for a handful of people.
We don't really teach that, do we? I've never taught that, nor have I ever been taught that. What to do when inevitably you have a small house. Actually, what we should be saying is, you're all going to have small houses, which is going to be crazy because all your favorite shows have big houses. So somehow in your mind, you think when we're done, we get big houses. And like, we need to be telling them, there needs to be some training, some cool moments. Like, I love the idea of Jamie, like, this scene is just for you, ma'am. Or we don't prep people for that. And then they're out there and it's fucking hard. I'll say a bigger house is an easier show, quote unquote. Is it? I usually have more success if there's a bigger house. So you're getting young improvisers or any performer out there in front of a house of 4 to 6 people. Come on, that sucks. That really sucks. I know we're kind of going into performer. I want to keep it on host, but one more audience size thing that I'm not over is when we invite a guest. I perform with Pretty Pretty Pony, which is the first Thursday of every month at the Westside Comedy Theater. And it's an Armando Ask Cat style show where we have a celebrity monologist tell stories and we do scenes based on those stories. We're inviting, you know, a known person to the Westside at 10 p.m., which now feels like midnight, which, by the way, our host Cole always references that. And it gets a nice little laugh and everybody kind of goes like, yeah. It's a one-liner where he's like, welcome, thanks for coming out on a Thursday at 10 p.m., which is now the new midnight or something to that effect. He gets a little chuckle and everybody kind of understands, like, fuck, this is late. But we, you know, we have this person come and they live in Eagle Rock. They're driving all to the West Side. And luckily we have good houses. We used to have great houses. And now it can vary. And it's really weird when, like, and now our guest, and there's 13 people in the house. I feel like mortified. It's hard for me to overcome that because I feel like they're doing us a favor by coming all the way out here. We're in the green room. They can hear a house. They don't know how big or small just yet. And sometimes it's like gulp. And it's like the same 6 students you always see there. And then a couple of people who know them from whatever TV show. And it can be weird.
That was, Chris, that was exactly the hardest part about that short form show Liam and I put on is, we had big name people, you know, Jonathan Mangum from Whose Line, Mindy Sterling from Austin Powers, yeah. You, Justin Michael, like these people who like can easily perform for as many people as they want. And I'm like, we can't have 13 people in a 100 seat theater for fucking Whose Line performers. Like it was mortifying. And so that was the most stressful part about putting on that show is like butts in seats. Somehow within the last day we were able to sell it out, which was super exciting. So it worked out, but that it was so much stress. That was the worst part. That almost makes me not want to do the show again.
Know,
it's like,
I know,
butts in seats.
I know.
Yeah. I think a good host too might give you a little preview of the house, right? You know, they're giving you a 5-minute warning before you're gonna come on, like, hey, just so you know, it's a little light tonight. Like, hey, you got like it's a nice audience. Like, you guys, it should be a fun show, right? Sell out is such a great phrase too to use as you're hosting the whole thing. But Chris, you kind of bring up like a guest, and that's an important thing for a host to kind of highlight, right? Like, you really, again, sort of in like that holiday party hosting atmosphere, you really have to kind of make everyone feel welcome. You have to kind of hit the important pieces, and yeah, you definitely want, even if it is a smaller house, like you're gonna sort of, you guys are in for a treat tonight. We've
that's
got
right.
Chris Alvarado here. Like,
that's why. That's right. Right. You know, we bring them out last too. Hey, at the end, we bow and we point to them, you know. All right, let me ask you this. Back in the day, do you guys have piano players, Sam, where you play?
Yeah, we have one in particular who's doing a lot of musical improv in the city.
Well, but I'm saying back in the day, just every Herald had a pianist, accompanist. I don't know those words. And it was always said, like, they're the seventh member of the team. They're the eighth member of the team. You know, they're scoring these pieces and there's fun little moments. I don't think the host is that integral. I can't talk anymore. I think we'd all prefer to have a good host, but if we have a bad host and they stink, I still think you can go out there and like pump it up and have a good show. You know, I don't think they tank a night.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up, because now you're also getting into maybe like the tech hosting side of it, right? Which is, what's the music that gets played? How does the blackout go? How does, you know, the people in the booth kind of also make it, they're in a way hosting an experience as well, even though they're not like on stage doing it, but you can really kind of tell when it's firing on all cylinders and when it's not. And if you don't have one, I think you kind of need the other, because if both are not going for you, it's
Jamie, you guys played around a little bit with some lighting and some stage, I don't know what the word would be, set up prior to one of your 21 seat experience shows, right? Was that, do you think that set up kind of an expectation for the house?
100%. And maybe this dips into a little bit of production, which I think we could have 5 episodes on production of improv shows. But absolutely, it sets the tone, the expectation. We played like soft piano music. The whole room was dark, except there was like a soft purple pink spotlight on an empty stool on the stage. And like, just like, you know, and we, you know, this is a different kind of improv show. So we appreciated the tone setting that did. We didn't have a host. That was the host. The space was the host. It introduced the show, because it told us this is the kind of improv show this is going to be. So I guess that's, to bring it back to hosting, how much does the space itself, like Sam saying, the music that people, you know, enter to set the tone of the evening, and really, you know, the soft host factors, maybe we could call those, of, you know, the room and how easy the ticketing is and getting in. And if the show's starting on time, like last night's show didn't start till like 15 after. And like the show, Liam, Chris and Chris's wife saw, but it didn't start for 30 minutes late with no explanation. There was no hosting to say, hey, sorry, technical difficulties, will be out in a minute. It was just 30 minutes of us just sitting there sweating. So it was like, it was a whiff. It was a whiff on that part. So I guess the hosting, to me, if I'm going to give you some of Jamie's hosting takeaways for Jamie's School of Hosting, it would be, one, manage the audience's expectations. And then two, I think it's really important that it doesn't feel perfunctory. That doesn't feel rote and scripted. I want it to feel spontaneous, that you're with us, that it's not just like you're reading the next team off your notes, because then it feels like the host doesn't care enough to remember the one thing that they have to do. So to me, I think it's super important to like minimize the notes that you have, or minimize the cards that are in front of you, to be present with the audience. And that's what I was thinking too about, we didn't really talk too much about it, but how you end a show. Because there's so many different ways to end a show. Some people go and they introduce each person in the cast. I'm like, that's a huge energy killer, because like, you had a great blackout line, everybody's clapping, and then now, all right, be quiet while we introduce everybody. It's like, oh, you miss the wave of the energy of the audience. Like, I don't know. So I really disagree with that form. But, you know, like, I know, Chris, you and Heyday, like you bow acknowledge the tech booth, but because Heyday is so, you know, prolific, especially in the West Side LA community, that almost every team ends their shows that way. And to me, it starts to feel like automatic. Like, this isn't their way of ending the show. This is, they just are doing what Heyday does, you know? And so it feels like kind of automatic and thoughtless. I want people to have thought and feel like it's a real experience, or, you know, this is how we end shows kind of thing. I want to see, you know, how do these people end their show? Like, what makes sense for their performance?
What about the moment before that, which is the out? We always tell our lighting person, give us that light. Let us call our own out. If we're going over time, sure, pull on us. But that's part of our secret sauce, is we call from the stage. Like, it's wild to think that people would be up there, and to say we don't go long, we get pulled. But for the most part, the idea of going out there and hoping whoever it is in the booth is like on the same vibe as we are is crazy to think that they're going to call. I like calling it. But I wonder if to somebody who doesn't see a lot of improv, that could look a little unprofessional almost, you know, from the inside. But we know the rhythm, we know the pacing, we know what this piece needs and what it doesn't need. So it's very satisfying for us to call it from the inside. But I wonder if somebody else might think, like, why are they doing that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we are paying our tech people, which I think is really great, but a lot of them aren't coming through classes, right? They're people who are running the booth for a job, and became very clear early on that we had to do a better job of providing guidance on the blackout. And that actually became part of the host responsibility, was sort of saying like, okay,
wow,
this is how the show's going. Cause especially, I think it's great that Heyday can call their own blackout. I don't know. That'd be an interesting thing for like a student team, right?
Good point.
Be able to do. But having someone who kind of knows the form is pretty important, right? Because you don't want to black out a story before the story.
Sam, remember, Jimmy, you might have some idea, but I mean, I owe all coaches, and West Side for a while, all coaches called the show. All coaches were in the booth with their hand up like this. And then they went like this. And sorry, no one can see me. They held their hand up so that the person in the tech booth could see, oh, we're about to go. And when the coach drops their hand, that means pull the lights. That I stopped going to my team shows just because of schedule. I can't make them all. I watch them on video. But like, that was part of the deal, was a coach was supposed to be there and give show notes. I don't know if that's happening anymore. Do you guys get given notes night of show, Sam?
Yeah, the coaches did a really good job for the House Herald teams of being there for the shows. And, you know, I don't think every coach can do that for every team, especially the indie ones. But I actually really appreciated that, with only like maybe one or two exceptions. I think we generally got notes the night of the show. Although, like, I've heard, that's such a funny thing to me. I've heard people being like, the show's over. Like, what am I going to do with that? We can work on it next practice. But I like notes if the show went well. I don't love notes when the show didn't go well, because I think we all kind of know the show didn't go well, and we don't need to be reminded that it didn't go well.
I don't like that. My whole freaking life, I know this is not the notes episode, but my whole freaking life, we get notes after the show, stand in some alley and get the notes. And I haven't done that in years, and I don't miss it at all. I don't miss it. I watch the show, and then I'll talk to them at the next rehearsal. But yeah. Like, you know, I remember I hear this note like, if you got to get better at saying names, or it's like, what? Like, what are we doing here? I mean, like, okay, next scene. So you walked in and you were a monkey and you was a donkey. Then he called you a donkey monkey, and then you weren't donkey. It's like, what am I doing? Like, what note is going to like change everything right now? Anyway, I'm going on a rant here.
We ended up doing like favorite things, and that was a good way to end the night.
Oh, but that's nice. That's nice.
Yeah. I really liked my hosting send off. I thought I did a good job where the last team would perform. All right, you know, keep it going for Chris. And then I'd say like the team that came up before Chris, again, keep it going for Jamie. And then there was an opening team, and keep it going for Sam. Keep it going for yourselves. Have a good night. Right. Like really trying to like build a crescendo for the audience to kind of send off. Like,
that's a nice one.
Yeah. Thanks.
But Sam, I've also been around for at the beginning. That's an interesting host note, where it's pretty common to list the teams who are about to come up, and then you save the one who's about to come up last. But along the way, certain teams are getting more applause than others based on who's in the house and who they're there to see. So it's kind of weird to be like, Team X, yeah, Team Y, and now the chance for Team Z in the middle. Like everyone's here to see Team X. But I do like that send off, Sam. Everybody gets a little nod, and even the house gets a nod. That's nice.
That's funny. I always say, oh, X has a lot of fans here tonight, right? Like, I kind of like call it out a little bit that they're a
That's
little
good.
over enthusiastic for it. But you're right. Like, man, that's another hosting thing, right? You don't want too much imbalance between the acts. You want it to seem seamless, right? You want the whole night to be like
Yes.
one even building piece, if that makes
If
sense.
us three stepped on stage tonight, and for some reason we didn't designate who was going to get the suggestion, and we walked out, and you two looked at me and said, "You get it," I can feel the panic in me right now. Even though I've done that a million times, there's a bit of a panic that sets in, which is interesting. Like maybe some people are better at it or more comfortable. Because right now I could even feel the little in my chest, like tighten. Like, well, and I would do that sometimes. Like, oh yeah, it's me. All right, so here's our team name again, and just kind of start flailing. I can feel that. I wonder what that's about. Let's diagnose that. Let's not diagnose that.
I do think you're right, though. There are natural hosts. I think that, like, based on your upbringing, you had parents who hosted a lot of things. Like, some people just really take to it very naturally. But I do think for every performer, it's an important skill to have, a nice dimension to have to your game.
Agreed. And I know that's a kind of a nice way to wrap up, but just it's interesting to say, like, Jamie likes to host at his home. I never want to host at my home. And if I am hosting at my home, I'm panicked the whole time, which is interesting that it carries carried over to the stage. While Jamie, you hosted a gigantic short form show, gigantic, but big sold out house, nice big players, hadn't done this before and did it really well.
Thanks. I attribute it to my holiday party planning, where I know the beats of what I have to hit. I'm aware that there's some kind of transition that has to happen in between, and I walk through and I feel. Here's one of my superpowers as a human being,
Oh, let's hear it.
and maybe people will disagree if they know me well, but I feel like I know almost always exactly what people want from me or a situation. I feel like I can just read a room and I can read a room in advance. So when I'm going into a situation, I feel like I know how people are going to feel about it. I know that, oh, if I'm going to, let's say I'm going to somebody else's social occasion, I'm like, oh, I know this person never, they don't know anything. We're just going to be sitting around talking. There's, it's going to be super uncomfortable because I don't know anybody. So I'll do this, that. Like I feel like I can like channel future situations and then try to take steps to correct it. And so that's why I was like, that's why I personally was interested and surprised by how hard hosting was, because I'm like, oh, I knew this was going to be hard. It was even harder than I thought. So like, even as much as I prepared going in advance and like trying to plan everything out, I was like, oh, this is even still harder than I thought it was going to be, which
That's
is
I
what
like
really surprised me.
that a good host can anticipate the needs of the house or their guests. That's interesting.
Yeah, and then
I like that.
respond, because if the house is a different energy than you thought it was going to be, then you have to pivot. It's you can't play to 1,000 when it's just seven.
I love that maybe the way that people can practice hosting on their own for a show is to actually just host people over their house. Because you're right, like knowing that pressure point and where to hit for a group of people, that's
Jeez, that's good. Because
and
there
then
also is
facilitating.
information, right, Sam? You have to be like, not only like here are the goat cheese balls and there's the wine, but this is where the restroom is. Also, if you could hold a handle up afterwards, because it tends to stick the little information things.
Yeah, this is so and so. So and so is really great at XYZ. You two have that in common. Whatever, like just set them up for success. And then it goes as far as like the invitation. How are you inviting people? Are your directions clear? Do people know what they should be bringing? Do they have questions for you in advance? Or have you answered all their questions and managed their expectations for the evening so they can go in comfortable and prepared mentally? And then how do you say goodbye to them?
One
Do you kick
time,
them out at midnight because like you're tired and done, or
yeah, right. One time, Jamie gave me an invitation to a holiday party. I didn't know it was an invitation to a holiday party. He just handed me what I thought was a holiday card. It was around the holidays during a rehearsal, and I put it in my backpack. And then that was it. And then I think he reached out to me, like, hey, didn't get your RSVP, or somehow I was reminded, or maybe I just found it. I don't think he reached out to me, Jamie. And I opened this card. I was like, oh my God, Sam, it was handwritten, detailed, beautiful, requesting your present. I mean, just, and I was like, oh shit, I didn't even open it. And I'll never forget, like, you really do a great job with that, Jamie. You're really good at that.
Well, I didn't account for it getting lost in Chris's pocket for 2 months. So I guess I didn't predict everything. So there's always, you know, the best plans, you know.
You know, so we're done here, but on our way out, I'm a good enough host. I don't enjoy doing it. Sam?
I would say that I like taking care of the audience and the performers. And so if I have to go out and do it, it's not my first choice, but I enjoy getting the crowd ready to go. Jamie?
I think I'm okay at it, but I am looking forward to getting better at it. Like, I'm excited for this next show, Liam, and I have coming up. I'm like, oh, now I know what to do. And so I'm excited to kind of improve on it. But I think it's a fun psychological challenge to predict, you know, the minds and feelings of 50 mostly strangers in an evening and make them have a good time. Like, that's the fun challenge of this whole art form.
Well, Sam, you brought us into the show as a host, so why don't you take us out then?
All right. Well, we're wrapping it up for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please be sure to like and subscribe to The Comedy Fix and leave us a review. It really means a lot to us to hear what you're thinking. But until next time, Sam, Chris, and Jamie, talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.